Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Merry Christmas.
On AM 560.
Ho, ho, ho.
The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I need the Judith Martins out there to provide some advice and counsel. You know, Miss Manners.
Oh, that's right.
I need some Miss Manners etiquette advice. The first topic is our outstanding technical producer, Justin Kosick. Yeah, he turned 12 yesterday.
No, I think he turned 26, right?
Yeah.
27.
Oh, wow. So now he's really off his parents' insurance.
Yeah, I know.
They grow up so fast.
They do.
He's 27 years old, and he took the day off for his birthday.
312-642-5600, Turnkey Pro Answer Line. 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
This is...
What?
This is a dedication to you, Justin, from the late, great Greg Giraldo.
When did we become such a nation of such self-important, narcissistic douchebags that, you know, when it's your birthday now, you just think you can go to any restaurant and make the waiter sing happy birthday to you? When did that trend start? That's the most irritating. That used to be for children at Chuck E. Cheese. Now you can go to any restaurant. It's my birthday. Dance around or something. Give us a little song, would you? Give us a little song. Go get me a piece of cake. It's my birthday. You go to restaurants now, they got to break out in song every 5 minutes. I was in a restaurant the other day. The waiters had to go out 4 separate times to different tables and sing happy birthday. And holy the owner comes out, and even the dishwasher's out there singing, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. It's my birthday too, but no one's singing happy birthday to me because I'm in the back washing dishes for 50 cents an hour, but somehow I'm the bad guy for taking away American jobs. What f***ing job am I taking away? Who wants to wash a f***ing dish for 50 cents an hour? Okay, yes, arguably all of us coming over like this collectively lowers the labor rates in the country. We could debate it on those merits, but no, you're taking my job, you're taking my job, you're taking my job. What kind of fucking ignorant bullshit is that? You have to ask yourself, are you willing to pay the increased cost of paying a prevailing wage for some fucking slob to stand back there washing dishes? If it's such a fucking problem, why don't you just penalize the employers who hire us? Oh, because that will be politically unpopular. How old are you now?
So I would think that in the same vein, making Pepe the dishwasher singing happy birthday, taking a day off because it's your birthday.
All right. Well, what did you do on your birthday, Justin? By the way, did you wish him happy birthday?
Happy birthday. Right. How old are you now?
So what'd you do?
Well, in my defense, it was one of those Salem, you got to take it off days.
Oh.
Use it or lose it.
No.
So
you benched.
Don't buy that.
You bent to the man. It's all corporate. Why? So yeah, you use it or lose it. So why didn't you take Monday off? Why didn't you take today off? Why did it have to be your birthday?
You should have had a 3-day weekend.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, they were explaining to me how to game the system now, and now I know.
They were explaining. Oh, really?
We have subversives
in the. Yeah. Okay. All right. I mean, he's more of a man than I am. I mean, more of a grown up than I am because he's getting married.
Right.
So he's more of a grown up than I am. But still, so I'll give him that. But the birthday thing.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. You know, blaming it on the corporate weenies.
Well,
I don't know.
Did you sleep in? Did you go to a spa treatment? Did you
spa treatment?
Did you go to a bathhouse?
Day of beauty. Yeah.
Well, what'd you do?
I mostly just went out for food, and they do not sing happy birthday to you anymore. It must be a labor shortage issue.
Oh, that's right. because of COVID.
Depends where you go. Where'd you go to eat?
We went to Cooper's Hawk and Seasons 52. Cooper's Hawk for lunch and Seasons 52 for dinner.
Oh, you made a whole day of it.
No singing, which is nice.
Yeah, it is nice. all right, I have a second etiquette question. Speaking of corporate weenies, our Christmas party is today.
Yes, and?
I'm sure Justin will be there bending to the will of the man.
No, and everybody's got to bring a grab bag.
Not everybody.
Yes, it has to be $25 or less. And then it's a great game because then you could steal. If somebody opens something you want, then instead of opening your gift, you take what they want. It's a juggernaut.
Boy, man, that is. I'm so sorry. I'm going to miss it.
No, you have to go.
Oh, that's wonderful, too. I see what you've got a little ornament on yours.
Very,
this is this
very
does
nice.
This become like a Fraser Niles escalation where somebody goes a little bit above 25 and then the next person goes a little bit above 50.
This is more than $25.
Can't color inside the lines. What is it?
I'm not telling you what that is.
What do you mean?
Because it's a surprise. That'll ruin it for everybody that's going to the party, which you're in town and you should go to the party.
Did you make that sweater yourself? Are you bedazzling as a hobby?
Yeah, is it giving you a headache?
This is what you're wearing. This is why you're wearing this, because
for
the Christmas party.
Yeah.
Oh, it's lovely. yeah, so I'm not going to the Christmas party. I've got, obligations.
You're here. You should go. Our boss wants you to go. And our new boss is going to be there.
Yeah, right. It could look awfully good on a young man's record. No, yeah. I'm not attending, despite now really feeling like I'm left out and missing the grab bag.
The grab bag is the best. Mike Scott, are you going to come?
I actually do have an official, just like Dan, an official obligation today, and I cannot attend.
Some of us work right through the holidays.
Justin, you're coming, right?
Oh, no.
Why?
Yeah, he's still recovering from his birthday.
I took my birthday off, but then again, I'm 59. So once you reach that age... taking your birthday off becomes less of an obligation or bowing to the man. It's more of a, hey, I deserve it. I've worked 38 years in this business. I'm going to take my birthday off, and especially if it coordinates with a long weekend.
And then what do you do?
Which mine did.
And then you just, sleep all day.
Yes.
Yeah, that's all you do, right?
For heaven's sake.
There's no celebration.
No.
That's all you want.
Ice cream party.
We went to Putt Shack, which was kind of nice, but,
Yeah. When was your birthday? Sorry.
When was my birthday?
Okay, right.
Okay, turn our mic off.
Turn it off. That's also something people...
December 12th.
December 12th.
Recently.
Yeah. That's also something that adult males don't care about.
Oh,
you missed my birthday. You didn't say happy birthday to me. You missed my birthday. Who cares? Yeah.
Quinn's going. Quinn, are you coming today? Anybody? Quinn?
It's going to be you and the brass.
Quinn says he's not staying for the grab bag.
Why?
Mm.
Just for the free food? Oh, because he didn't buy one.
What if I told you that I think Amy's present is the never nude or nearly nude pajamas?
What did you think that they are?
The nearly nude, never nude pajamas. Right. What do you mean?
What do you mean?
What do I mean?
It's the My Pillow slippers. Maybe it's balance of nature.
Well,
you can't guess it right on the first one.
No, see?
I'm sorry. You can't be original with your gift.
Yeah.
Come on now.
She just takes whatever she gets free from the corporate sponsors.
Right. The Ace Hardware is right down the frickin' road. Yeah. Come on now.
Although, Quinn.
People need salt and shovels today. People need hand warmers. And you're... Come on.
Quinn might stay now for the grab bag, though, because she does something nice to the little lady.
Really nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, this snowstorm, we canceled Friday Christmas for no reason.
Friday Christmas? Christmas is on Sunday.
I know, but we were going to have our Christmas early on Friday, and we canceled it. Now it's going to be 6 inches of snow.
When is that coming?
Well, they told us it was going to be 16 inches. With a bomb cyclone. Oh, my God, we're all going
to
die.
9 to 12 inches, but that's not why you need to cancel things. It's the 60-mile-an-hour winds and the blowing snow that are going to create blizzard conditions.
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah, that's not good. You want to be on the road with that jalopy going to St. Louis or wherever the hell?
A hobo ride.
So what was this? You sent me this email. Should I come to Christmas party? No. And if I do, what gift should I bring for the gift exchange? Well, I'm not coming.
But if you were, what would your gift be? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. You're throwing that talk topic away in the garbage.
I just presented it. I can remember it from here. Yeah. So what would my gift be if I came to the Christmas party and participated in the grab bag? I'm not doing any of those things, but what should it be is what you're asking.
What should it be?
What would you like?
120 life.
120 life? I could do the same thing. I just do whatever I get free. Yeah. Pass that along.
It's right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Box 120. And I'll leave it in the 120 life box, too, to take the surprise element
out.
I don't know. I'd probably,
$20, throw it in a box.
Butterfly knife. ammo. Something like that.
Yeah,
something
nice.
Christmassy.
Hey, that's not a bad idea.
Exactly.
There's a new indoor place that does indoor shoots.
Article 2.
I just drove past it. It's south of Joliet. Big indoor facility.
Oh, Range 355?
Maybe, I'm not sure.
They do
indoor skeet and things like that. It's a huge place.
Really?
And that would be a good gift.
I went skeet shooting 2 weeks ago. At
indoor skeet.
Country
yeah,
Club.
Really.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, no doubt.
Do they have a sporting clay course in there too?
I think they have a
or like
course.
Five stand.
Yeah,
something like that.
Yep.
Oh wow. Oh, and maybe I'll give that as a gift to myself. All right, that's what I would do. I would put a gift that I want in the grab bag and take it for myself,
and then leave early, like Quinn.
Basically.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hallelujah! Holy s***!
On AM 560.
Where's the Tylenol?
The answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. This $1.7, $1.9, $2 trillion omnibus spending bill that Senate Republicans are helping the Dem Socialists move through Congress before the year is out is really an affront. And it's also, while it's nothing new, it's a reminder about these Senate Republicans, these big government spendocrats in the Republican Party, who, you know, never Trumpers or the left will put on a pedestal. The Mitt Romneys and the Susan Collinses and the Lisa Murkowskis and these cowardly lame ducks like Rob Portman and Richard Shelby. I mean, they're just awful. You want to talk about enemy inside the perimeter. And then again, from the establishment, tell me again about how we need to focus on the fiscal issues to the exclusion of all else. Tell me again about we make our bones by being the party of fiscal discipline and, you know, less government, lower taxes. It's a scam. And the reason Republicans have lost in races they shouldn't have lost, the reason Republicans have been eliminated, all but eliminated, in states like Illinois is because voters a long time ago woke up to the scam, particularly Republicans.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You could also reach us all morning long at our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
4,000 pages dropped on Monday, and they're whipping it for a vote tomorrow.
You think anybody really read that?
I mean, it's nice that Zelensky's coming to town to get his $45 billion check. If he can get $45 billion, at least show up to get the check.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
First time leaving the country for him.
$1.2 million for LGBTQIA pride centers. $1.2 million for certain. I mean, again, these it's not the amount in the context because it's minuscule. It's the point is, should you one red cent be spent? Oh, it's not that much. What kind of attitude is that? We shouldn't be doing it, but since it's not that much, it's okay. That's the attitude that perpetuates all this. $1.2 million for services for DACA recipients at San Diego Community College.
What?
$477,000 for the Equity Institute in Rhode Island to provide teachers with, quote, anti-racism virtual labs.
What does that even mean?
$1 million for Zora's House in Ohio, a co-working and community space for women and gender-expansive people of color. This is Heritage Foundation detailing this. $3 million for the American LGBTQ Museum in New York City. $3.6 million for Michelle Obama Trail in Georgia.
The Michelle, I'm going to get lost on that trail.
Yeah.
Where's Amy? Maybe she's on the Michelle Obama trail.
Valerie,
what does that even mean?
Valerie Jarrett will be the guide. $750,000 for the LGBT and gender nonconforming house in Albany. $2 million for the Great Blacks in Wax Museum in Baltimore.
Oh, so like the Trudeau Wax Museum, but okay.
The Trudeau?
I'm sorry, the...
Madame Toussaint.
Madame Toussaint.
Yeah, Justin Trudeau. I mean, he's probably getting money for a wax museum, too, in Toronto. I don't know. Why not?
I'm so a little under the weather.
$750,000 for the Trans Latin Coalition to provide workforce development programs and supportive services for transgender and gender nonconforming and intersex immigrant women in L.A.
You said that all in one breath.
10 Senate Republicans are making this happen. 10 Senate Republicans.
Mitt Romney, oh, you already named
him. And also, too, I mean, you know, Robert Byrd. I mean, you know, he's got nothing on Richard Shelby out of Alabama. Republican. Almost everything in Alabama is already named after him, but this bill designates the facilities at the FBI at Redstone Arsenal to be known as the Richard Shelby Center for Innovation and Advanced Training. Isn't it wonderful when politicians spend your money to name crap after them? Let's never forget Richard Shelby. I can't. Anytime I'm in Alabama, everywhere I turn around, his name's staring me in the face.
I know.
Uh-huh.
But now there's going to be more named after him.
Uh-huh. I mean, it's just, it's not incredible because it's not unexpected, but there are things to take away from this and people to hold accountable. What did I say too? Oh, the U.S. Department of Mascara, the Modernization of Cosmetics Regulation Act, that's part of this, will give more power to the federal government to regulate people who have lotions and lip gloss. They'll have to register their facilities, report adverse events, abide by stipulated manufacturing practices. All this is, I mean, and this bill is full of it. All this is one operator in an industry or a group of operators in an industry rent seeking, trying to get the government to negatively impact their competitors. And that's what's happening here. Just to give you an example, it sounds silly, but there's a point to it. As the Wall Street Journal opined, for years, companies hawking clean, quote unquote, beauty products have lobbied Congress for regulations that hamstring the competition. These, quote unquote, natural brands are free to use their preferred ingredients, but their goal is to ban compounds they dislike, even if the underlying science is questionable, and even though not all Americans can afford to spend $60 on nighttime moisturizer. Yeah. The luxury brands want to knock out the generic brands, and they're using the government to do it. And that's not just in the makeup industry. That's in all these industries. But that's a good example of what happens here. I mean,
what bills do you want passed?
What bills do I want passed? What do you mean?
they threw everything in there.
Oh, what money do
I want?
Yeah,
what money do you want spent? It's your tax dollars.
Marvin, Burlington, Wisconsin.
Well, this is exactly why I quit giving money to the Republican Party many years ago. It's turned, the national party's turned into what Illinois was. I mean, you think about Rauner turning his back on the right to life people The same thing's going on here. We elect them. We fight hard to get them elected, and then they turn their back on us. Don't they understand what we're going through out here with inflation, and they spend money on people who aren't even citizens? I mean, it's outrageous. And this nonsense, kids can't read and write, but, oh, we got to have the money for the LGBTQ plus 15, whatever it is this week. I mean, I just don't understand their thinking. And, you know, they want to take away our rights. They want to take away our rights for guns, because they know that sooner or later push is going to shove and people like me are going to have enough. And there is going to be militias out here that are active, more active than they've ever been before. I mean, it's the same thing with the abortion issue. My tax money's going for abortion. How's God going to look at me when he says, did you do enough to save the unborn, sir, when I have to stand in front of him? I mean, they're using my money for things that I have nothing to do with me or my interests. And it goes on and on and on. And no one says a damn thing about it. Wait till the last minute. Get it passed. It's Christmas time. No one's going to be thinking about this in 2 years. I mean, it's ridiculous. And they wonder why no one's showing up to the polls.
Thanks for the call, Marvin. I mean, there's a $100 billion corporate tax hike in this bill.
$100 billion?
There's also an IRA tax hike coming down the road. Larry Kudlow, you know, hardly a proud boy, hardly a wild-eyed conservative rabble-rouser. I thought Republicans were against tax increases. Yeah. I thought the Republican Party was against tax hikes. I thought the GOP criticized Joe Biden during the midterm election over tax hikes. So he asked, why are Republican senators even thinking about a bill that has a $100 billion tax hike in it? What I see is a bunch of Republican senators voting to tax and spend, which I thought was the problem with the other party, which is called the Democrat Party. So there seems to be some political confusion here. Oh, there's political confusion. Well, there's not that much confusion, but there is lack of definition, lack of distinction, lack of separation. Those things are certainly at play. Those 10 Republican senators, who, by the way, of course, Mitch McConnell, you know, will dutifully go to bat for, and so will the entire sort of Beltway establishment. Next time those who are up against any upstart conservative challenger, taking them to task on allegedly bread and butter issues for the GOP, like taxing and spending. Right. And again, the backdrop of this is, why would you deleverage? Who deleverages in politics? The deleveraging here is you have Republicans taking control of the House come January, and that is a more conservative caucus. And so ostensibly they could wrestle a better deal from Democrats who control the Senate and the White House, or finally play a bit of a game of brinkmanship and call the bluff on all of this taxing and spending against the backdrop of the inflationary spending, money printing and spending over the last 3 years. They just don't want to. These are the kinds of Republicans that don't want to make arguments. They want to surrender on this so they can prepare to surrender on the next thing. We see this over and over again. Illinois is the base camp for that approach to governance. And what does it get you? A super minority of Republicans, as you see in Illinois House and the Senate, and as you've seen for a while now, and the worst governed state in American history. That's what it gets you. There's a good piece by a economist for the RAND Corp. Oh, inflation, inflation, inflation. And what do we say about this? How do we message this? Republicans, can you make an argument? This is the number one issue. Pounding Biden and Democrats on the highest inflation in 40 years. Right. Well, as he points out, far more American, this economist from RAND Corp, George Zhu, far more American households earn a middle-class income than enjoy a middle-class lifestyle. For middle-class households, the percentage of after-tax income spent on necessities has jumped from 60 to 65%. Working-class households already needed 108% of their monthly income to cover the basics in 2021. It was 118% of their income to cover the basics in 2022. They're either dipping into savings, getting help from relatives or safety net programs, or going into debt.
Yeah, or driving up their credit cards.
So what are we all going to do? We all going to wait till every other state joins Massachusetts and New Jersey. I forget the third, that where you can receive north of $100,000 in total benefits from the state, total welfare benefits.
Never have to work another day in your life.
Yeah, it just all become wards of the state.
And look at what Rand Paul did. How long would it take the clerk to read this? This is the stack of the, I mean, no, come on.
Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys, you know, one thing I get tired of with these rhinos is the stupid okey-doke tricks they pull. You know, like with the infrastructure bill last year. We passed this $2 trillion bill because the Democrats want to pass a $4 trillion bill. We wanted to stymie them.
Yeah, right.
Or the fear-mongering. Yeah, with, if we don't elect Kevin McCarthy as speaker, it's going to be chaos. We might see a Democrat get elected speaker. And then another thing they do is they try to sell little blue pits over the infielder's head as grand slams, like Kevin McCarthy. Every time I see him on TV, hey, we got the vaccine mandate for the troops lifted. Well, that's great. I support that, but that's it? I mean, you could get a lot more taken out of that stupid defense bill if you tried hard enough. And
not with these Republicans in the Senate, you can't. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, no, yeah, obviously. But one thing, I'm glad Chip Roy led a revolt, but I'm disappointed it's only 13 House Republicans that joined him. And as far as the speaker race, though, I kind of want to hear your opinions of this, Dan, because I'm not a McCarthy guy, but I don't see anyone substantial to challenge him, not even Jim Jordan. I wish Jim Jordan would get off the Fox News smack talk and try to fight for position leadership where he can actually do something.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I'm at. Thanks for the call, Mike. I mean, there's no serious challenge to McCarthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Andy Biggs isn't going to cut it. And so as the concerns I have about McCarthy notwithstanding, I don't see him as some sort of intellectual leader or even wartime consigliere. But he was the minority leader, presided over the takeover of the House. There is not a compelling option. And so, yeah, McCarthy. And then, you got to hope that the House Freedom Caucus continues to institute some caucus discipline, the kind of caucus discipline we don't have in the Senate. It's more difficult to institute caucus discipline there, I understand. There should be more senators really holding these 10 out for public ridicule, if not a straight-up public flogging. Roger, Southside, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, Merry Christmas to you both. Great show, as always. How long do you think we have here in Illinois, our country, okay, with these, as you said, these senators, that are, these Republican Senate people, and the whole agenda of Congress, until we have full-on Russia, full-on Third World. And here's the thing, Dan. If we have, I always say it comes down to capable people. Who's willing to do something? Okay? Right now, okay, anybody who's in the spotlight or anybody who has anything to lose is not going to do anything. Okay? But how long before, you know what, they're at the walls of the country clubs and the private schools and the private universities? Because that's what it's going to take. Like you say it weekly, you know what? We haven't lost enough. Okay. The middle class is holding on or, you know, keeping their heads above water. How long before that really sick category group of those middle class political idiots who want to be in that top class of elitist morons, especially here in Chicago, Illinois, okay, how long before their daughters and sons are affected? Before, you know, the overdoses start, before migrants in Lincoln Park or downtown or the Gold Coast are harming their children or their wives
Or you know what? The next time there's a big function at a one of these fancy country clubs, you know, Oak Brook River Forest, you know, call anyone you want, Hinsdale. You know,
yeah, I get it.
Before there's 5,000 migrants there, and you know what? There's nothing that can be done about it. If something isn't done fast and real fast, and you know what? Signing petitions online on social media is going to get nothing. I mean, the state of Texas is pretty much deputizing anybody that can carry a weapon right now.
I hear you. Thanks for the call, Roger. Craigmont Greenwood.
Oh, hey, good morning, Dan and Amy, and thanks for taking my call. Well, I've been telling my friends and family and all that, Democrat, Republican, my voting strategy, and I think I'm vindicated. I tell them, I don't care whoever's in there, don't let them make a career out of it. Vote them the hell out of there, and don't let them make a career out of it. These people get all cozy, they're all in with each other, and then they put on their charade and their little act, dog and pony show, like they're fighting with each other. They're sitting every night at the bar having drinks together, laughing their butts off. Man, that was a good one we pulled off today. Yeah, I showed them how we're fighting. They ain't fighting with each other about nothing. They're all in cahoots, they're rotten politicians, everything, filling their pockets with our money and everything else. And that is a rotten thing. It's a rotten situation we got with politicians. That's all I got to say about it.
Thanks, Craig. Well, you know, again, Richard Shelby, I don't know, like there, we pulled one over. I think they believe their own press, and they have this level of self-importance, and they're statesmen, and they're part of the vanguard class protecting our democracy, and I'm owed this, and I've earned this. Richard Shelby, again, I'm talking about a Republican, Senate Banking Committee chairman, formerly. $656 million in earmarks just for that guy as a golden parachute on your dime. See, you know, rides off into the sunset in Alabama. It's just despicable. There's just no other way to say it.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
You stink.
I think you're going to have a good Christmas, all right?
You smell like beef and cheese. You don't smell like Santa.
An AM560.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission: to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So, I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630. And learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We talked a bit about Twitter Files installment number 7 yesterday. This provided by Michael Schellenberger via Elon Musk, of course. And it focused on the FBI and Hunter Biden's laptop. And there were some new details that are important here. Jim Comer was on with Maria Bartiromo talking about it. Jim Comer is going to be the point man, House Oversight Committee, when Republicans take control. And he is the one that really led that press conference from a few weeks back with Jim Jordan talking about their intention to pursue this Biden Inc. investigation, which is not an investigation about focused on Hunter Biden. It's an investigation focused on Joe Biden. And Hunter Biden, obviously, is a key player in that investigation. Yep. Talking about things that we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, that the Republicans in the House haven't been able to obtain, like these reports from banks of suspicious activity. Some 50-odd, only a few, have been obtained by House Republicans that relate to Hunter Biden's financial transactions, his business dealings. Well,
and maybe kickbacks to his father?
Well, that's part of the discussion. And so Jim Comer on this latest dump from Twitter and how it relates to not just Biden Inc., but now the FBI. And the kind of investigation that needs to be done at FBI. As we heard from the incoming head of the House Intel Committee yesterday, looking for specific individuals, not the FBI, but specific individuals within the FBI to hold to account. And also, frankly, to understand how many individuals and in what roles are involved and what should be done about the FBI. We've had the conversation here. Most on the Hill are reluctant to have it, but whether the FBI should continue to exist in its current form. And by the way, flying off of our discussion at the end of last hour about this omnibus bill put forward by spendocrats and being facilitated by Senate Republicans, wait till you hear what the FBI gets in this bill.
Oh.
But first, Jim Comer on the Twitter files.
Well, it means a lot. More evidence of wrongdoing. You know, in the beginning, I thought that there were probably two or three rogue employees who were orchestrating this cover up of the Hunter Biden laptop story. But now we know the FBI had a division of at least 80 agents. We also know that the FBI paid Twitter over $3 million for their time, all the time they took over the past couple of years in telling them who to suppress, who to ban. You know, it's just things that the government has no role in. The FBI was never granted the authority to create any type of disinformation task force that policed the social media sites. Now, this we know with Twitter. We've heard similar stories from Zuckerberg. Who knows what went on at YouTube and Google? This is an agency that's out of control. And the most frustrating thing for me right now, Maria, is the fact that in this omnibus bill, there's increased funding for the FBI plus a $1.75 billion headquarters facility for the FBI. We need to halt everything with the FBI, all funding, until they come forward and explain to Congress exactly what they were doing, why they were doing it, and who gave them the authority to do it. You know, one way we could get the FBI in front of the committee really quickly is say, we're not giving you a penny until you all come down here and explain to us what this task force was, why you told Twitter to suppress the Hunter Biden laptop story when you knew darn well it was true. And the Senate is counter to everything that we're trying to do in the House from an oversight standpoint right now, especially with respect to the FBI.
Such an important point. I mean, the purse strings of the FBI, you want to get their attention, say no funding. You're not, I mean, you know, at this point, even just no incremental funding that I'm sure they've already budgeted for and are busily preparing to spend. Nope. That is on the shelf until you explain yourself in the face of these documents released by Twitter. And paying Twitter employees for their time. Did you catch that? $3.5 million for Twitter employees to spend some time with the FBI doing their bidding.
According to the last Twitter dump, the FBI was spending so much time with Twitter executives every 2 weeks, having meetings that lasted for hours, telling them what stories to suppress, what looked like disinformation, who to ban from Twitter. I mean, things that the FBI has no business doing. They reimbursed them for their time, over $3 million over a two-year period. That's just Twitter. We don't know how much they paid Facebook, Google, YouTube, or the other social media platforms. 80 employees, that's roughly $12 million in salary and benefits dedicated to policing social media sites. Are you kidding me? At a time when crime is out of control, human trafficking's out of control, we have a crisis of fentanyl. We have a crisis of shoplifting. The crime rate in these cities is higher than it's been in my adult lifetime. And the FBI's focus on policing social media sites.
So the FBI paid Twitter $3 million. So would you characterize this payment as an incentive or as a bribe?
Reimbursing them for their time. You heard them. So Twitter employees are taking time away from their day-to-day work to do the bidding of the FBI effectively with respect to their threats to democracy, protect the integrity of our elections, Russian collusion silliness. And so they compensate them for their time. But I mean, it speaks to just the larger collusive relationship between the FBI and Twitter at minimum.
And I thought President Trump yesterday did a really good job, a thoughtful interview. He wasn't erratic. He was very mature in his response to learning this news.
Well, I characterize it as terrible. Yeah, $3.7 million or something like that, and possibly a lot more because that's only what they have right now. No, it's terrible. I'm just telling you, the country can't believe what they're seeing. And Elon Musk did a big service when he released all of this stuff because our country is corrupt. Our elections are corrupt. We have a very sad and sick country, but we have a very corrupt country. Who would have ever thought we would have seen the FBI putting their hand on the election? Not only putting their hand on, but you saw the poll companies come out. Could have made a 20-point difference. Now, you know, without it, I won this election. But with it, it's you know, 20 points. You're talking about millions and millions and millions of votes. And I think if they add it all up, 32,000 votes, even by their count, 32,000 is what you needed. This, the pollsters said this would have had a many millions of votes difference. So they rigged the election.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Who could have predicted that this would come to pass? Actually, a lot of people. A lot of people. But who wants to take material steps in the direction of the FBI or the intelligence community, the intelligence agencies? You know, absent something that you can't ignore. And look at how the effort that is being undertaken by the D.C. press corps and the Democrat Socialist Party to ignore all of this.
Oh, yeah. You have to dig deep to find the truth on this story.
So who could have predicted? A lot of people could have predicted it. The question is, when you intercede, what do you do about it? How can you do something about it when you're at the same time lauding the FBI for this or appreciative of the CIA for that, legitimately in many cases? And you're saying we rely on these federal law enforcement officers at the FBI. We rely on the agents at CIA and now DHS and DNI. 1975. You got to hear this.
Okay.
Former Idaho Senator Frank Church, Democrat.
This is 1975. All right.
Senator Frank Church from Idaho, a Democrat, on the deep state and tech, being in bed with government, the technology companies in bed with government, and what that could portend for America almost 50 years ago.
But let me tell you this. In the need to develop a capacity to know what potential enemies are doing, the United States government has perfected a technological capability that enables us to monitor the messages that go through the air. These messages are between ships at sea. They could be between units, military units in the field. We have a very extensive capability of intercepting messages wherever they may be in the airwaves. Now, that is necessary and important to the United States as we look abroad at enemies or potential enemies. We must know. At the same time, that capability at any time could be turned around on the American people. And no American would have any privacy left, such as the capability to monitor everything, telephone conversations, telegrams, it doesn't matter. There would be no place to hide. If this government ever became a tyranny, if a dictator ever took charge in this country, the technological capacity that the intelligence community has given the government could enable it to impose total tyranny. And there would be no way to fight back, because the most careful effort to combine together in resistance to the government, no matter how privately it was done, is within the reach of the government to know. Such is the capability of this technology. Now, why is this investigation important? I'll tell you why. Because I don't want to see this country ever go across the bridge. I know the capacity that is there to make tyranny total in America. And we must see to it that this agency and all agencies that possess this technology operate within the law and under proper supervision so that we never cross over that abyss. That's the abyss from which there is no return.
Idaho Senator Frank Church in 1975, the Church Committee, which exposed massive CIA and FBI criminality ranging from its surveillance of Americans and efforts to destroy dissenting groups to its involvement in illegal drug testing and assassination. 1975. And now layer in tech companies that Senator Church couldn't have imagined that came on the scene three decades later and have folded in with the government. Frank in Arlington Heights, here in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, good morning, Dan and Amy. This is Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama. And I'm 88 years old, and I'm retiring from the Senate, of course. And we just elected a great U.S. Senator coming up, Senator Katie Britt. She'll be the hottest senator in the U.S. Senate coming up, no doubt. You were talking about that yesterday on your show, stuff like that. But I remember the Church Committee, of course. I got elected to the House as a Democrat in 1978. And I got elected to the Senate by 6,800 votes against Jeremiah Denton in 1986. I heard you guys were pillaring me, though, on your show here, so I wanted to call in and respond to anything that you needed me to respond to.
The $656 million in earmarks earmarks that are associated with you, Senator.
Is that enough?
Yeah, well, I know there's the Richard Shelby Center at the University of Alabama, so I don't think any of that money is going there. But we have some earmarks, no doubt. Other senators do it. Other representatives do it. You have to get the money for your state, Dan. That's the way it works.
Does your name have to be on the money that you get for your state everywhere it goes?
Well, a lot of senators do that. Yes, this courthouse is named after them. There's a Thomas Eagleton courthouse down there in St. Louis, as you may you may know from your trips down there. Yeah, lots of them all over the place. The post office is named after lots of people too. This is the way the Senate works.
We Harry
did
Reid
a lot of hard work
airport.
There. $1.7 trillion omnibus bill. We did. Do you remember the day, Dan, in 1994 when I switched parties? You remember that day, November 9th, 1994? I
remember like it was yesterday, yeah.
Yeah. And you were just getting out of college. And I get up there and I said, I'm switching parties, affiliation to the Republican Party, effective immediately. And I've been a Republican ever since, a good Republican.
Yeah, I remember.
Evidently, you're not happy with all of my votes.
Well, you're right. You switched parties so that you could survive in elective office in Alabama because Alabama was turning red, right? Isn't that why you did it?
Well, as I said in my farewell speech, I was at the vanguard of the Republican realignment in the South. And President Reagan asked me to switch earlier, and I did in 1994 when the signs were obvious.
Do you miss Howell Heflin at all? Do you think about him often?
Well, Jeffrey Sessions beat him in 1996, and I do think of Howell.
Yeah,
he was a good judge, good man.
Do you think of Chris Farley's impersonation of Howell Heflin often as well?
Yeah, yes, I do. I also think of I forget the comedian who was it Al Franken who imitated Paul Simon from Illinois, your state.
Yeah,
with the bow tie.
The bow tie.
And I remember the Ted Kennedy One by, I think that was Phil Hartman as well.
Hartman,
that was a really good part of that whole thing. And whoever did Joe Biden was good. That was Kevin Nealon, I believe.
Yeah, very good.
Back in that skit. So,
you've really been honing your Senator Richard Shelby impersonation, Frank.
Good.
I'm very impressed. That's very good. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
And
very
good.
Have a Merry Christmas, guys.
Very
Take
good.
Care.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you for all that you've done.
Yeah,
thanks,
Senator. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Whatever he's related to, the Shelby from Peaky Blinders.
Bob in Buffalo Grove.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call. Always great talking to you. Let's go back over 60 years ago. I was a teenager, but I still remember Eisenhower's outgoing speech, "Beware the military-industrial complex." Now we can add the tech industry to the beware of. Have a good holiday and drive safe if you're coming to work on Wednesday.
Thanks for the call, Bob. Appreciate that. Yeah, maybe this is a conversation that Republicans can take up. I mean, again, I guess essentially the Comer Committee is going to be the new church committee. At least that's what we hope. By the way, just to close the loop on the church committee, after the exposure of FBI and CIA criminality, there were some minor reforms enacted to try to rein in the CIA and the intelligence agencies. They were gradually reversed, and almost 50 years later, here we are, and layer in big tech companies now. I better take Senator Church's warnings to heart, I would think. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Boy, I'm sad to hear of Franco Harris's passing. Mike Scott was reporting that. I'm going to say something that is sacrilegious.
Oh, boy.
Blasphemous here in Chicago.
Okay. Well, let's get out of here without any emails.
The Steel Curtain Pittsburgh Steelers of the late 70s. Best team in NFL history, including the 85 Bears.
Miami Dolphins are going to say no, no, no.
No.
Undefeated record was the 72 Dolphins.
Yes, but four Super Bowls with the core intact. Best team in NFL history. Franco Harris and John Stallworth, Lynn Swann, Terry Bradshaw on the Rocky Blyer. And then on the defense with Mean Joe Green and Donnie Shell and Ham and Lambert. Best team in NFL history.
312-642-5600. Turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA.
I don't want to dwell on it. I don't want to dwell
on it. I know, but
it.
I'm just throwing that
if
out.
If anybody wants to challenge that, I mean, we can pour over it. But
not the 85, 86 Bears?
Yeah, I know. You remember them. They don't get much talk around town. But, 85 Bears, you might remember they won a Super Bowl. It included players like Jim McMahon.
Right. Gary Fensick. This Walter Payton,
right,
who went to Jackson State.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Now you know.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
I pay attention, you know.
All right. Let's get to matters local and local schooling. K through 12. I know people, I guess, want to talk about the mayor's race, or I don't even know if they actually want to talk about that very much. But everything that's going on federally, and we want to also include what's going on locally. K through 12 school systems. School board elections in April of next year. All these teacher contracts that are up at these school districts, as we were talking about with Ted Dabrowski yesterday. So we'll just keep telling you stories about some of what's going on in school districts in and around Chicagoland, so you get a little flavor for what's happening and maybe what's happening close to home for you. Crete Moni High School's Heather Marie Godbout. She's a member of the school's equity team. Of course she is. And of course the school has it.
And she has purple hair. I think that should be reserved for kids, but okay.
She doesn't appreciate people who disagree with her. People who disagree with her are right-wing conspiracy theorists, nut jobs, quote-unquote.
Of course. Probably racist, insurrectionist, every word she can use.
She's opposed to traditional grading policies because grades get, quote, conflated with other things that aren't actually learning, like effort or work ethic, whatever that means.
Oh, that's a bunch of bull jive.
Whatever that be, work ethic, whatever that means. All you right-wing conspiracy theory nut jobs who seem to think the teachers are out here just indoctrinating children into some sort of woke agenda that you can't actually define, I'm just going to come clean. I am, in fact, indoctrinating your children. I'm indoctrinating children into understanding their own agency and learning how to think critically about issues that impact their lives. I'm indoctrinating children into wanting to be productive citizens, whatever that means, of the world. So that's what I'm doing. I'm indoctrinating them. You're 100% right. Oh, was that you flipping the script on those critics of your woke politics in the classroom, Miss Goodbout? Yeah. Well, she went on after she made this offering on Libs of TikTok. Made this offering on TikTok that got picked up by Libs of TikTok, and of course, she became the latest example of the bad example. She responded to the criticism that she's received for those statements I just read from her.
I am but the latest teacher on TikTok to be targeted by Fox News Digital. Yesterday around noon, a story dropped about me and what a woke indoctrinator I am. And of course, they said all kinds of things that they seem to perceive as insults, but actually, I don't agree are insults. So, you know, there was that. I'm fine. My administrators fully support my First Amendment rights to free speech on my own social media platforms. And so I, you know, really, other than a couple of nasty grams from people who decided to spend part of their day yesterday looking up my email at my school district and sending me some colorful comments, one of which was signed by Phil McCracken. So, you know, it's about the level of intellect you would expect from people who would do that sort of thing, to send mean emails to people that they disagree with. I really have had no negative repercussions. But this brings up the larger point about teachers and our ability to speak truth to power and to try to make sure that we are creating schools that are equitable and safe and are helping to create the society that we all would want to live in. Because I work in a state that has strong teachers unions. I work in a state where we still have collective bargaining rights. I work in a state where tenure and seniority are still a thing. So ultimately for me, this is a blip. Like, okay, whatever. A couple of days I had to spend not using my TikTok the way I usually use my TikTok. But the chilling effect that this can have over time, especially on teachers who, aren't straight passing like I am, because they never did pick up on the fact that I'm a queer teacher, or B, are people of color, and C, work in places where they don't have the same protections that I have in the state and the school district where I work. All of this bullying is just designed to shut us up so that they can continue to push their agenda. And you know what's not going to happen? I'm not going to shut up. If anybody thinks that I'm going to stop talking about equity in schools or anti-racism because Fox News posted a stupid article about me with the most unflattering picture ever, I might add, they are sorely, sorely mistaken.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. If you think she's going to stop pushing her politics in the classroom, then you're sorely mistaken there in Crete Moni 201U.
And how dare they use a horrible picture of me?
So
they
didn't pick up on the fact that she's a queer teacher, right? Because who cares?
Who gives a every? Oh God, nobody cares.
She, yeah,
God.
No, that's not true. Nobody cares. She cares. She cares, and your kids are going to be made to care.
Everybody's gay.
That's what you have to appreciate. They care. You will be made to care. So don't do the nobody cares and, you know, it's fine. No, it's not fine. It's not fine because you care. It's what you mainly care about. And the secondary fact is you're going to impose your views and your will best you can on kids, and you're going to, frankly, waste everybody's time with your politics in the classroom rather than whatever it is allegedly she teaches at Crete Moni 201U, which is not a particularly good school district, by the way, in terms of academic performance. But, you know, I digress.
Are these things important? I mean, these teachers who try to act hip like their kids, it makes me a little nauseous, meaning the dying of the hair. But besides that, the fact that what she's saying, I mean, she's bragging that she's indoctrinating our children, and then she wonders why people are doing a story on her. Well, you're bragging about it. So you bought this attention on yourself.
I mean, again, all we can do is tell stories, and all you can do is pay attention to what's happening in your school and maybe get involved to run for school board or to support those like-minded who do, and to push back on teachers who offer this. I mean, she can say whatever she wants.
Yeah.
The whole thing that's so silly, the projection of the left, they're trying to silence me. No. Actually, I prefer if you keep talking. The more that you talk, Ms. Godbout, the easier it is for me. So please keep talking. The only group that is trying to enforce the unanimity of opinion is you and yours, because you're in the business of celebrate or else. Right? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. John Naperville, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. Who cares how many piercings?
Nope. Hold on. John, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Start over.
That's okay. All right. Yeah, who cares how many piercings a teacher has, what color hair, what gender? I really don't care. Is she teaching the curriculum? Or is she going off the rails teaching her own curriculum? And is she succeeding teaching the curriculum she's supposed to teach? That's all that matters. Why isn't that what's being talked about?
Well, it is what's being talked about, except by her. She's going to teach. You heard her. It's repeating her words. I'm going to continue with the anti-racism. I'm going to continue with the equity. Those are just the left's code words for their political activism. Again, don't say I don't care about the color of their hair the color of their hair. Yeah, I don't care about your gender, your sexual behavior, so on and so forth. They do. And you're going to be made to. That's their disposition. So now you know what they mean when they present this, what they intend to do when they present their identitarian profile. Now, what are you going to do in response? Don't tell me I don't care, and so that's all we need to do. Say, I don't care, and then we walk away because I said I don't care. You can't call me a bigot. No. No, I don't care about your sexual behavior. I prefer actually not to hear about it, but you speak your piece. You go ahead. But I know what you're doing is introducing that for the purposes of focusing on it and forcing kids to focus on it as they're held captive in your classroom. And that's where I do care. So I think we need to spend a little bit less time telling these neo-Jacobins in the classrooms what we don't care about and a little bit more time telling them what we do care about. Carol in Moments.
Hi. Good morning, Dan and Amy. As far as I'm concerned, when the teachers should go on strike, all of them, forever.
Right.
And start over, get these kids out of the public school system, period.
Yeah, the password is tax credit scholarships in Illinois, at least. Thanks, Carol. Peggy, Chicago.
Hi, me?
Yeah,
hi,
you.
Hi, Peggy.
Yeah,
Peggy.
I just wanted to say there's a DVD called Whose Children Are They? And this is happening now in all the other states. What's happening is that the teachers' unions have all the power. They're getting paid fabulous salaries. The teachers are not getting this. The average teacher is not. But when they get hired, it's like they think they're supposed to join the union. So they sort of automatically do. And what happens is that these unions are actually, they want your children to become people controlled by the state. And they showed kindergartners who were holding up signs that said, you know, down with Trump or whatever it is, down with the Republicans. And they were holding signs like that. They were kindergartners. They're being taught to do it, okay? And the teachers are having, I don't know what to do, you know, because the people with the power are the teachers' unions.
Yeah, like.
And if they can get them, what they need to do is to pull the plug on their finances.
Well, thanks for the call, Peggy. Right, it's easier said than done. But it does start with, parents accessing resources available as needed to send their kid to a better school. But you know, you can't run forever. Some people are not going to be able to or choose not to send their kid to a private school. So at some point in your life, you got to stand and fight somewhere for something. It always seemed to me that, like, your kids and their education was an obvious place. But maybe I'm wrong. Seems like I am. Paul in Plainfield.
Yeah, so, hey, Dan, I have 2 points. First point is, what do you think the odds of a single parent bringing this up at the board meeting? I don't think it's going to be very great. Two, why are these teachers and all of these libs of TikTok people are mad that they get the publicity that they so much desire, right?
Right.
Yeah. They brought it upon themselves.
Exactly. Why isn't she so thrilled that finally she's speaking to an audience that would not normally listen to her on Fox News and libs of TikTok?
She is thrilled. And now she gets to be the, you know, defiant martyr who's under siege. She is absolutely thrilled about it. That's why they post to TikTok, to have libs of TikTok pick it up and to hold them out as examples, because they are attention seekers. Otherwise, they wouldn't be, you know, doing this masturbatory nonsense on TikTok and social media. Exactly right. Thanks for the call, Paul. Julie, Southside. Hey, Julie.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Good.
A couple points I would like to bring up this morning. Number one, I'm a teacher. I consider myself a good teacher. I don't preach what the left is trying to do to our children. Number two, as a teacher, something that has never been brought up, and I listen to your morning show every morning when I'm driving into school. There's a handbook that students have. How many people have looked at student rights? Students in our school district have rights. And I am so sick and tired of this handbook being thrown in my face for the way these kids dress, for the way these kids speak to us. It is disgusting and it is appalling. In my school, I have never seen more bustiers and Victoria's Secret worn by our kids, and nothing is done about it.
And those are the boys. Thanks for the call, Julie.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
I want Christmas. Just give me plain baby Jesus lying in a manger. Christmas.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Merry Christmas.
On AM 560.
Ho, ho, ho.
The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Gerard Baker writing in the Wall Street Journal about 2022 lessons to be learned. He writes, if we can draw any lesson about the direction of Western politics in 2022, it's that voters haven't decided to re-embrace the failing governing classes. They have simply rejected the chaotic buffoonery and malignant narcissism of some of their recent champions. Haven't decided to re-embrace the failing governing classes. Golly, why would they not want to re-embrace the failing governing classes? Well, let me count the ways. Here are three principles of the current regime starting with Mr. 10%, the big guy, President Biden. This video unearthed from a November 4th campaign rally where Joe Biden is asked by ostensibly an Iranian-American or an Iranian reporter, I'm not sure which, about the Iran nuclear deal. Is it going to happen? She didn't want him to do it. And he announced that I'm not going to announce what I'm about to tell you.
President Biden, could you please announce that JCPOA is dead? Can you just announce that?
No.
No, why not?
No. For a lot of reasons. It is dead. We're not going to announce it. Long story. We're going to make sure they...
We just don't want any deals with the Mullahs. No deals. They don't represent...
We aren't going to announce it. It is dead, but we're not going to announce it for a number of reasons. You just announced it. That's Biden. On like a signature piece of the foreign policy agenda of the Joe Obama three terms.
God, he doesn't think sometimes before he speaks.
Corinne Jean-Pierre, White House spokeswoman for Mr. 10%. Yesterday, had this exchange with Jackie Heinrich of Fox News on Title 42. And the Title 42, I know the Supreme Court has put a pause on it, but Title 42 going away, the COVID era regulation that allowed the federal government to repel people coming into this country based on public health. Listen to this exchange from Heinrich and between Heinrich and KJP, remembering that the Biden administration pursued repealing Title 42.
If you're saying that Republicans aren't doing the work to get this done, and then you have someone like Joe Manchin saying, well, the president has the ability to ask for an extension, he should be asking for an extension because we're at this point where you've got a deadline and a crisis, is that within the president's authority to do that?
So, look, we remained under a court order to lift Title 42. That is a court order. That is a court order that is telling us to lift Title 42, and we're going to comply because we follow the rule of law.
But the administration sought to lift it.
But it is a court order.
But that is... started by you guys.
It was a court order that has been provided to us, and so now we have to comply, and that is we have to comply by December 21st. It is a law that has been put forth. What I'm saying is that it is a court order.
It's a court order. I know we got it.
Is it a court order? That we are going to comply with.
Do you know what a court order is? By the way, it's not a law. It's a court order. Number one. Number two. The point Jackie Heinrich was making: you sought the court order, and now you're pretending that you're beholden to the court order that you sought. You didn't have to seek it, and you could withdraw pursuing it. It's a court order. Our hands are tied. Oh, my gosh. Is she dumb? I mean, she's just so dumb. Come on.
So in over her head, and it's not getting any better.
It's not even a close call. Speaking of those adjectives, Kamala Harris on NPR's All Things Considered. So we got Joe Biden announcing he's not going to announce the Iranian nuclear deal is dead. We got KJB pretending that the court order on Title 42 is not something the administration sought. And we got Kamala Harris against the backdrop of all of the Twitter files that have been dumped over the last several weeks. Kamala Harris on NPR talking about social media and social media companies.
Oh, no.
So what I would say about any social media site is this. I fully expect and would require that leaders in that sector cooperate and work with us who are concerned about national security, concerned about upholding and protecting our democracy, to do everything in their power to ensure that there is not a manipulation that is allowed or overlooked that is done with the intention of upending the security of our democracy and our nation.
I mean, so the takeaway from all the information we have about federal law enforcement and intel agencies colluding at minimum with big tech companies, her takeaway from that is That's not strong enough. I would require them to do it. And you wonder why Gerard Baker writes, yeah, voters haven't decided to re-embrace the failing governing classes. God forbid if we ever do. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Gerard Baker, editor-at-large, Wall Street Journal. Gerard, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much indeed. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you can understand why people are searching, feeling like they're searching in the dark for competence from their government.
Yeah, that was like listening to a performance called Dumb, Dumber, and Dumberer, wasn't it, really? That, I mean, yeah. I, you know, you, I don't know how you get to, by the way, on Karine Jean-Pierre, I do wonder if there's any topic on which she's at all knowledgeable, because she clearly knows nothing about the economy, she knows nothing about the laws, you pointed out, she knows nothing about foreign policy. It's a really, really, really strange state of affairs. Look, I mean, you are absolutely right, and I thank you for referring to my column. I did write in 2022, voters didn't not re-embrace in those failed leaders. I think the problem, the thing that prompted that rather obvious point was a less obvious point, which is that, you know, we had a strange year this year electorally. I mean, we have a government, you're absolutely right, we have an administration that is incompetent and ideologically driven in a direction that I'm confident the vast majority of Americans do not want to go. They've messed up the economy. Inflation is an extraordinary mess, and the corollary of inflation is going to be probably a recession next year. As you point out, they can't seem to keep falling over themselves on whether it's the JCPOA, on foreign policy, on the mess in Afghanistan that they created, what they're doing domestically in terms of some of this stuff, some of the stuff that Kamala Harris is talking about there with Twitter. This is an epically, picturesquely disastrous administration, I think. And yet, what happened in the midterm elections? Democrats basically won. I mean, let's not sugarcoat it. They increased their majority, and they got themselves a majority, a real majority in the Senate. They held Republicans did win back the House, but by the narrowest of margins, and thanks essentially to the kind of red wave that we got in Florida and to some extent in New York, which just tipped enough House seats over the line. And Democrats made seats in state houses and governorships around the country. So the question, the worry is that people, that certainly, and it certainly seems to be the lesson that Joe Biden and his crowd seem to be absorbing, which is that, hey, you know, we can kind of just do anything here, really. I mean, you know, people think we're doing a great job. It's because, you know, never before has a not since John F. Kennedy has a Democrat done so well an incumbent president done so well, an incumbent Democratic president done so well in midterm elections. So I think that, you know, the lessons that have to be drawn are this is not this is not, the American people are not voting to affirm and to endorse these failed policies. They're voting, unfortunately, for Democrats in greater numbers than one would have expected, because the alternative has not been very attractive. And that's why my reference to chaotic buffoonery and malignant narcissism, that's the problem. So, I think I'm hopeful that the Republicans have come through the last year, have learned the lessons correctly. And now, as we face another year or two of a disastrous administration, with Democrats controlling the Senate and being able to do more in the Senate than they've been able to do in the last year, I think people will start to see just how bad things are.
With respect to Zelensky coming to, talking a little bit more about foreign policy, with Zelensky coming to address a joint session of Congress and pick up his $45 billion check, how do you look at the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the West's response in terms of the impact on geopolitical stability in 2022? How much does that inform America's standing in the world, the response to Putin?
So I think, look, I know a lot of people are unhappy about this, and they don't like the fact that the United States has been funneling large amounts of military aid and financial aid to Ukraine. And by the way, I think it's outrageous that the United States is doing that heavy lifting, and Europeans who have just basically given up any notion. I think something else I wrote in my column this week is that the Americans, Europeans, maybe have finally woken up from their ridiculous dream that, you know, they could live in a kumbaya world where nobody goes to war with anybody else. It's ridiculous that the United States is providing the vast, vast bulk of the support for Ukraine. The Europeans should be providing much more. That said, I actually do think this is valuable and necessary. I think the the damage that has been inflicted on Russia this year by the Ukrainians, thanks in large part to American military, American weapons and American material, is enormously important. It's, you know, we've gone. Vladimir Putin has been in power for 20 years, more than 20 years in Russia, and every the longer he's been in power, the more he has expanded Russia's sway in the world, both through economic terms, in economic terms, and in energy, but also most importantly, military. You know, he's invaded country after country. He invaded Georgia. He's invaded Ukraine twice. He has been messing around in the Middle East in ways that are unhelpful to us. The damage that Ukraine, the Ukrainian people, again with primarily American assistance, have been able to inflict on Russia, the pushback against that expansionism, that revanchism of Vladimir Putin, that is one of the, you know, I mean, a terrible thing to say because so many people have died. It's such a, you know, it's a tragedy that wars happen in ever, but this one in particular. But the strategic advantage that has given the United States in the world is incalculable. So it's a cynical thing to say, but for the, whatever it turns out to be, $100 billion of aid that we may end up giving Ukraine, or maybe even more than that, that is represents extraordinarily good value because of the strategic advantage that it has given the United States over one of the two most important strategic adversaries that the United States faces.
Well, why hasn't the Europeans done more? You know, were they just reliant on America and said, oh, they'll take care of it?
Yeah, because they don't. Yeah, I mean, first of all, their economy is in a terrible state, partly because they pursued bad policies, and particularly because they pursued terrible energy policies. They've, you know, given up on fossil fuels or trying to give up on fossil fuels, which is an act of folly. Secondly, they don't have military. They don't really, except for the British, to be fair, and the French to some extent, they don't really have military capabilities either in terms of their own actual weapon, their own military forces, or in terms of their own armaments industry. They don't have the. They just don't. Again, out with the British and the French, you just don't have that kind of capability. And you know that is the. And by the way, and to be, whatever one may think about Donald Trump, and I've been very critical of Donald Trump. You know, one of his important insights when he was president was to say to the Europeans, you know, we're not going to pick up the tab all the time. We're not going to keep doing this. You've got to contribute more to defense, you know, and particularly given the risk of war in your own continent, which of course has now come to pass, you need to do more. And unfortunately, they just don't. They don't have, they've spent 50, 60, 70 years running down their own defense capabilities, and they just don't have the ability to do it. Only the United States, and I say on a smaller level, Britain and France, that have any sort of ability to do that.
How Ukraine plays domestically here, you know, it's just so interesting, this realignment where the left is now for, you know, foreign interventions and underwriting wars in faraway places with, you know, they're putting the Ukrainian flag on their Facebook page and so on and so forth. So they're there for basically blank check for Ukraine. They're there for blank check and no oversight for CIA and FBI. This is where the left is in this country. And so I'm thinking about that. And as you talk, we talk about these, the domestic as well as the international and how it relates to the domestic. And maybe with respect to the midterms, maybe we're trending in a place, at least right now in America, where it's going to be an 8 or 9 seat majority one way or the other in the House. It's going to be a couple seats one way or the other in the Senate. It's going to be very close races, a few tens of thousands of votes spread across a few states for president, because blue states are getting bluer and red states are getting redder, and the country's just that much more divided.
Yeah, that's possible. Although actually, I think the Republicans, again, if they hadn't picked bad candidates and pursued this, you know, ruinous approach of, you know, we've got to relitigate the 2020, we didn't lose the 2020 election and it was all fraud and stolen, and that turned people off to an extraordinary degree. I think if it hadn't been for that, I think Republicans would have done a lot better. Look, Republicans actually won the popular vote in the House race, right, by about three and a half points, despite the challenges that they were facing. So,
That's what I mean. The margins get bigger, but it doesn't change the balance. In other words, you know, DeWine, DeSantis, Abbott, they represent, about, I don't know, 60% of that popular vote spread just in those three states. And so it doesn't really change the balance of power. You just see the spreads increase, the margin of error increase in these races statewide and even at the congressional level.
Well, I mean, without getting into the weeds, I mean, some of that is partly, I mean, on the House side, part of it is because there are many more safe House seats thanks to redistricting, right? So it is, yeah, you're right. You need a bigger overall popular vote majority to produce a bigger majority in the House. But I would say, I mean, again, I push back a little bit. Look at what happened in Florida. Ron DeSantis, you know, that is a, you say, you know, we're a 50-50 nation. Yeah, it's true. But look, what Florida's been a 50-50. Florida's been a purple state for as long as anyone can remember. It's been the swing state. Ron DeSantis won that state by nearly 20 points.
Right.
Now, that to me suggests that there is some, you know, now I know part of that is inward migration from, right. You know, people have come in. Although, frankly, one of the things people were concerned about was, you know, a lot of inward migration has come from blue states like New York in particular down to Florida, and people were worried that that might tilt the balance in Florida.
It was red voters from blue states, as it turned out.
Yeah, true. But the point is, this was an extraordinary blowout that he achieved in Florida, and I think that is, there's a lesson in that. Look, and by the way, I'm not quite ready to jump on the Ron DeSantis bandwagon. Yeah, I think he hasn't really been tested. I think he's a clever politician, but I think there's a lot of questions to be asked about how good he is. But look, just look at that record. He governed for 4 years. He won that state, remember, by a wafer thin margin in 2018. He governed for 4 years in a populist, Trumpian, let's say, we can say it, Trumpian way, but he just didn't have any of the nonsense and the buffoonery and the kind of malignancy that's associated with Donald Trump, and he won by 20 points.
Yeah.
So I think it's, look, I'm not suggesting for a second that it's going to be a Republican candidate, DeSantis included, in 2024, who's going to win the election by 20 points. It's not, you're right, it's closer than that. But I don't think we have to have these endless knife edge 50-50 contests. I think there is a hunger for competent government that represents Americans and actually stands for what America stands for and achieves things that American and recognizes the greatness of this country and the greatness of the American people. I think there's a big majority out there for that, and we'll see.
He is Gerard Baker, editor-at-large, The Wall Street Journal. Gerard, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Santa's coming to town!
Yeah! Oh, my God!
On AM 560.
Santa here? I know him!
The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, three numbers. 4,155, 1.7 trillion, and 10. 4,155 page spending bill that adds up to about $1.7 trillion that is going to move because 10 Republican senators are going to do the bidding of their fellow spendocrats in the Socialist Party and move this to the president's desk.
I mean, Rand Paul even just tweeted, wow, what fighters. The GOP Democrats give the IRS an additional $8 billion per year over the next 10 years. What courage. And then he wrote a song, a Christmas song about all this.
The senators were nestled all snug in their beds while visions of pork danced in their heads. No budget was found, just mischief and debt, while the taxpayers hung their poor heads and wept. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter, senators sprang from their oxygen. What was the matter? Away to the window they flew like a flash, tore open the shutters when they heard the word cash. The moon on the breast of the new-fallen snow gave the luster of midday to objects below. When what to my wondering eyes should appear but a 4,000-page omni with endless debt year after year. With a little old driver, so lively and quick, I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his coursers they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now McConnell, now Schumer, now Pelosi and Vixen, on Biden, on stupid, on dumber and Blitzen. To debt, to bankruptcy, to free money for all. Now dash away, more cash for all. And then, in a twinkling, I heard on the roof the prancing and pawing of each little hoof. As the economy threatened to run aground, down the chimney, St. Nicholas came with a bound. He was dressed all in fur from his head to his foot, and his clothes were all tarnished with ashes and soot. A bundle of earmarks he had flung on his back, an appropriator's dream opening his pack. His eyes, how they twinkled.
For more on this, pleased to be joined by Steve Moore, economist, author of GovZilla, How the Relentless Growth of Government is Devouring Our Economy and Our Freedom. Steve, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Like good morning, guys. By the way, I'm coming to. I love that song.
Or a poem.
Boy, yeah. If only we had a few more Rand Pauls in Congress, what a difference that would make. By the way, before we get to this stuff, I am coming to Chicago on Friday. Now, here it's going to be very balmy in the 60s or 70s, right?
65 mile per hour winds. Good luck getting in, because you know we're having a bomb cyclone. They're calling it. So
how much snow? Okay, if I fly in on. Will I be okay if I fly in on Friday with the snow?
No, you're not going to get in.
I think you got a problem, even with that supersonic jet you fly around in. I don't know if that gets in.
Oh, all right. Yeah. Well,
I'd try to leave Thursday or come Saturday.
Okay, thanks for the heads up. So what's going on? And, you know, I've said this so many times on your show. It's not this country is not suffering from COVID. It's suffering from mad cow disease. And that is what's happening on Capitol Hill right now as we speak, as they continue to debate this atrocious bill. $1.7 trillion. This is the highest, this is on top of the $4.5 trillion Biden has spent. Republicans are supposed to be cutting government spending. Cut, cut, cut. And instead of cutting government spending, we're seeing just massive increases. They're back to their game of fork barrel spending with the slices of bacon for every district. This is a going away present for Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama, who gets almost $1 billion of pork for his state. You know, it would be cheaper to just buy the guy a gold watch, for goodness sakes, than to give away this budget. It is so rancid. And I got to tell you, conservatives around the country are so angry. And this is, I've spent a lot of time on your show trashing Biden and trashing, you know, Chuck E. Schumer and trashing Pelosi. But this one is on the Republicans. They're the ones who are allowing this to happen.
Well, so what's the response other than the chastising that's coming from the House to these lame duck Republican senators and just these lame senators like Mitt Romney that are going to provide the votes to move this along? If there's no accountability within the Republican Party, as we learned here in Illinois, then people don't trust that you'll be accountable if you were ever put in charge of anything.
Well, why would anybody trust the Republicans after this? I mean, seriously, why would we have any trust that Republicans are going to change directions when they do what they're doing right now to us? They're supposed to be taking a chainsaw out of the budget. We're running $1.5 trillion deficit this year. They're adding another, trillion to $2 trillion on top of the $31 trillion in debt. They say we need to do this for our national security. Look, $850 billion for the defense. I'm for a strong national security, but you don't measure national security by how much money you spend in Washington. Look at all the waste in the Pentagon. There's 100,000 civilians. It's the biggest bureaucracy in the world. And so what happens here, Dan, Amy, just so you understand the psychosis, is Democrats want to spend hundreds of billions of dollars more for social programs. Republicans want to spend tens and tens of billions of dollars more for defense. And what they do is sit down at the table and they both get exactly what they want. And the budget goes through the roof.
It's the same old, same old. And Richard Shelby gets $656 million worth of earmarks to put his name on buildings all over Alabama.
Exactly. Yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, I still say that a bronze statue would be a lot cheaper than $656
Clearly,
million.
It could be a nice statue for half the price.
Great departure gift, that's for sure.
So, So there's no accountability for McConnell. There's no real desire to change him, to change the leadership of the Senate Republican Caucus. Most of these guys are leaving, and the other guys are more or less insulated. So, I don't know. I mean, other than the jawboning you're getting from some House Republicans, what do Republican just rank and file Republicans out here in flyover country? What are they supposed to take away from this?
Well, it's not done yet.
About it.
They haven't voted on this yet. It really is important for people to, call your congressman, call your senator. I know you've got two hopeless senators there in Illinois, but just to express your disgust with this. I mean, if people would just rebel, like, and we need people in the streets, you know, protesting peacefully, of course, against what's going on in this town right now. It is so outrageous that we elected these people so they would cut the budget. The first thing, and that, you know, that's all they've talked about for the last year. Oh, we're going to bring the budget under control. No, they're not. They're not going to do that. Now, you know, here's the other thing. Other than Rand Paul and maybe 10 or 12, I had lunch with Rand the other day. He says there's only about 10 or 12 Republicans who actually want to cut the budget in the entire United States Senate out of 49 senators. Uh-huh. Only 12.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right.
That's about right.
And so the point is, like, this whole why would you deleverage and not wait for House Republicans to take control and address this annual spend next year after you have House Republicans in charge? Well, because we're afraid we're not going to get all the spending we want. That's the real answer.
Exactly. Now, see, this is an important point that you're making. No one can really understand the logic of what's going on here. In, 3 weeks or so, Nancy Pelosi will no longer be the Speaker of the House. You know, I can't wait for that day when you take that gavel away from her. But that means you'll have a Republican-run House that can start over again. I mean, in other words, why not just pass a 2 or 3 week budget to get us through the next 3 weeks and start over and then start cutting? I mean, we know that there's about $250 billion of fraud and waste in the unemployment program and the Medicaid program and the PPP program. None of this stuff has ever been investigated. None of these programs have ever come back. We've never caught up with the criminals who stole the money. Well, there's, by the way, Defense Department, we got to spend another $40 billion on defense. If we just took the green energy programs out of the Defense Department, we could use those to provide the money that we need for the Ukrainians. By the way, how much of that money do you think actually gets to the Ukrainians?
Well, that's an open question. There's been some reporting that suggests that, other than the actual delivery of hardware, there are real questions about the accountability of that money. Okay. Yeah.
What about the humanitarian aid that's supposed to come with it?
What's that?
The humanitarian aid that's supposed to come with it.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. You know, and I'm being very serious about this. If Americans, we all agree that we want to help the Ukrainians in any way we can. If everybody probably everybody knows some Ukrainian, just send them a check. Don't have the government do it. If we all just, you know, sent a $200 check to, you know, a friend in the Ukraine, that would do a hell of a lot more good for the Ukrainian people than these government programs that get intercepted by all these NGOs. You know, there's like hundreds and hundreds of these NGOs that take a big slice off the top of the money before it even gets to the country of Ukraine.
Yeah. We're still doing yoga for Ukrainians every week.
Yeah, there's
I'm not kidding you. Down dogs for Ukrainians.
Uh-huh. And where does the money go?
I got another one for you, by the way.
Zelensky. By the way, there was a Politico story this week. U.S. Cable warns of major barriers to tracking Ukraine aid. The State Department Cable Services amid growing calls for strict oversight of the money and weapons flowing to Ukraine. But, I mean, here again, this is just, why would this the Ukrainian aid be treated any differently than domestic spending, which is all we care about is the inputs. We don't care about the outputs.
So we were reading through it. By the way, you were exactly right. This is how many pages? 4,000. What was the number you gave?
155. 4,155.
There's another 1,000 pages attached to it that's like, you know, further discussion. And so it's actually closer to about 5,000 pages. Now, Amy, how many of the members of Congress would you say have actually read the 5,000 page bill?
I'm going to go with zero.
Ding, 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 ding. You got it right. Nobody,
it's not an easy beach read either. I mean, the clerk
can
even
get knows what's in this bill. I've been talking to members. I've been calling them saying, did you know this is in the bill? Oh, no, I didn't. How'd that get in there? I mean, and so last night we discovered there's about $450 million for building border security in other countries in Africa and the Middle East.
Oh, I'm but like, not our border?
That's awesome.
Exactly.
That's awesome.
That's the most insane thing. $450 million for border security, but not in the United States.
It's perfect. That's perfect.
Hey, Stephen Moore, real quick. Trump's tax releases or long-sought tax returns are going to be released in a few days. What are we going to discover in those?
First of all, this is really one of the most outrageous violations of the law and the Constitution. These are private. I don't care what you think about Donald Trump. You hate him, you love him, whatever, been in between. the idea that Congress is going to force a private – Donald Trump is a private citizen now. For him to be required by Congress to disclose his tax returns is an outrageous violation of his rights. Shame on Congress for doing this. If the Congress wants to pass a law that says when you run for president, we have the right to look at your tax return. Okay, fine, do it. Pass the law. There is no such law. This is if they can look at his tax returns, they can look at yours. They can look at yours, Amy. They can look at my tax return. Everyone should be outraged by this abuse of power by Congress. Do I know what's in Donald Trump's tax returns? No, that's his own private business.
Yeah, and of course the precedent it sets, you're going to now just have tax returns become another political tool.
Exactly.
And this is why Ken Griffin actually is suing the IRS for the criminal release of his tax return. Somebody got him over to Axios, I think it was. And
why do you think, Dan, why do you think they want 87,000 new IRS agents?
Yeah, exactly.
Folks, they're coming after you. I just learned that, did you say that Rand Paul is saying there's, what, $10 billion more for the IRS or something like that? I don't even know the number. I should know this stuff, but I haven't made it through the 4,000 pages. But, this is why we have got to stop the hiring of 87,000 IRS agents. They're now going to look at transactions as little as $600. If you go out and buy a household appliance, Amy, the IRS is going to know about it.
It's $8 billion per year over 10 years. For the IRS.
That's a cut. They announced that they were championing that they cut funding to the IRS, which is it's nominal given the scope of the IRS anyway.
Sure.
Steve Moore, economist, author of Govzilla. Steve, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Okay. So you guys say I should probably bring a sweater if I come too.
You might want to bring a jacket.
Layers.
Yeah.
All right.
Don't forget the gloves.
Have a Merry Christmas, guys.
All right.
Take
thanks.
Care.
Happy Hanukkah and all that. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here.
On AM 560.
We're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap danced with Danny f***ing K.
The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Installment of Campus Beat takes us to Harvard.
Did you say Harvard?
One of those divinity schools turned incubator for Satanism. And it's a story about their incoming university president, Claudine Gay, currently the dean of the Faculty of Arts and Sciences. She is somebody who covers for falsified scholarship and punishes people for actual scholarship, the results of which she doesn't like. For more on the story of Claudine Gay, and really, since we're talking about Harvard, what it tells you about the academy generally in 2022 America. Pleased to be joined by Francis Menton, the Manhattan contrarian. Francis Menton, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning. Great to be here.
Tell us the story of Claudine Gay and how she was able to climb the ladder to become the next university president at Harvard.
Good effort at the snooty
Thank
Harvard
you.
Accent.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've seen the term failing up for Claudine Gay several times. She worked her way up the ladder at Harvard. I think her academic career has almost entirely been there. She was a faculty member relatively briefly. Her academic writings are relatively thin and quickly went into the administration and deanships, where she has risen from post to post, and most recently for about 5 years, the dean of the Faculty of Arts and Sciences. For those who don't know what that is, it's the large majority of the university. So all of the academic departments, like everything from English to history to foreign languages, economics, all the sciences are all under the Faculty of Arts and Sciences, all the undergraduates. What's not under that is the professional schools like law, medicine, etc. But
right, and so she's
probably,
so she's there, and she's able to start climbing Peter Principle style by making setting down markers like a covering, whitewashing an academic fraud case involving Ryan Enos, who was I guess a young professor at the time this occurred a few years ago, and he did a research paper on the impact of the demolition of public housing, and he falsified data, and he actually looked at Chicago too in the public housing projects here, and he falsified data, and that wasn't a big deal to her.
Well, you say he falsified data, and I would say I certainly don't want to claim that I concluded that, because I didn't look at his data, etc. But let's say he was the subject of very credible whistleblower accusations of falsified data that came along with plenty of stuff to check whether the whistleblower was right or not, including computer code. The whistleblower is anonymous under a federal statute, so we don't know who that is. So the person might be credible or not, but the matter was referred to a Harvard body, which seems to be the Harvard body that it ought to have been referred to, and then that body dismissed the claims without ever looking into, refused to look into them,
right,
and refused to also refer those claims to any other body that might be responsible. So it was,
she didn't want to investigate it because she liked the professor,
the
she liked the paper, the results of the paper that he published, and so moving on, no big deal.
You're concluding it's because she liked the results of the paper, and I think that's a very fair conclusion. Certainly that's where everything would point to, but this guy is supporting something that he calls racial threat theory, which is some version or branch of critical race theory, which is closely related to what Ms. Gay's own topics of her own academic research, such as it is. So he's a close academic ally of hers, and she manages to get any investigation of these very credible allegations squashed. Again, I want to say I did not personally review the allegations.
That's fine. I get it.
Thing I'm saying is here's some very credible allegations. They're referred to what is clearly the correct committee. And
she didn't want to investigate.
She gets a letter issued, not by her, but by another guy who's her immediate subordinate. She gets a letter
spike
issued.
Spike the investigation. Right. Spike the investigation.
Yeah, but 800-plus precincts in Chicago are missing from the data.
There's no need to litigate it. She didn't want this thing investigated. It's a credible claim. She spiked the investigation because she's an ideological, this guy's an ideological fellow traveler. The flip side of that is Roland Fryer, who we've talked about in this show, who is an eminent economist. I think he's one of the youngest tenured professors in Harvard history, and he has published a number of studies on crime stats. We talked about the one that you reference in your piece, where he found, and by the way, he discloses he's a Democrat. It's not like he's, but anyway, on officer involved shootings, he found no racial differences in the raw data or contextual or when contextual factors are taken into account. So the idea that cops are not out there gunning for black men was refuted by his study, and thus Roland Fryer was targeted by Claudine Gay, one would argue.
You say one would argue. So what happened, and I think this is really a pretty clear one. Again, all of Claudine Gay's motives are difficult to know, but here is Roland Fryer, a very rapidly rising star on the Harvard faculty, coming to some inconvenient conclusions for the preferred narrative. And then shortly after that article that you talked about came out, and this occurred, I think the article may have come out in 2016 or 17, and then the allegations hit Fryer in 2017 or 18 when he fires somebody who worked for him, who essentially is in a secretary role, not one of his researchers, but somebody who does his schedule and so forth. And he accused her of screwing up and fired her and offered her a severance package. And then Harvard cut it. She didn't like it. And she started making allegations of, let's call it sexual misconduct, but the allegations don't have anything to do with, like, asking for sex or touching her or
it's like off-color jokes and so forth, right?
There are things like off-color jokes, and I went through a lot of them. Stuart Taylor for Real Clear Investigations wrote a long article, which I think includes all of them if you go all the way through it. Some of them are jokes about big butts. Some of them are, I mean, I think I quoted my favorite one here, which is, I learned my negotiating skills trying to get laid in high school. That was
right. Okay. Yeah.
That
okay.
was one of them.
Offensive.
That's a joke. Roland Fryer allegedly said, yeah.
within earshot
of her, and so anyway, she makes this charge, and then what does Claudine Gay do as this Roland Fryer is going through the disciplinary proceedings within Harvard?
Well, so Roland Fryer's case goes to a different body at Harvard, the Office of Dispute Resolution, I think it's called.
Yeah, right.
And they look at it. There's something like 40 or more, 50 allegations of these off-color jokes against Roland Fryer, and they find that all but six of them either didn't happen, or there's no credible evidence of it, or are not objectively offensive or whatever. But they find six of them crossed some kind of a line that they have determined. And so they come down and recommend that Roland Fryer should be required to attend some mandatory sensitivity training.
I love sensitivity.
And that was the result of that investigation. But before the punishment was actually imposed, it went before some committee of high-ranking administrators at Harvard for review of whether they thought the punishment was appropriate. And the highest-ranking administrator on that committee was Claudine Gay. And when the recommended punishment came back from that committee, instead of getting mandatory sensitivity training, Roland Fryer got 2 years suspension without pay. All his research projects stopped, and his research facility and all his assistants fired.
And that's only because she couldn't send him to the chair.
But he's a successful black male, young, age 30. And what did he do?
He's not 30 anymore.
Well, not 30 anymore, but at the time, he was up and coming.
Mid-40s. He was 30 when he got tenure, which I think is in 2007. And this occurred in 2000. The accusations occurred in about 2018, I think, or 17. I think a big report on the report of this disciplinary committee came out, which is 70 pages long, came out in 2018, maybe late in the year. This punishment was imposed maybe starting in 2019 and going to 2021. Believe it or not, what I can't believe, and I don't understand this, the guy stayed at Harvard. He's still there. He went through all this stuff, and he was banned from teaching for a couple of years. He's back to teaching, and he's still at Harvard.
He didn't let him win.
Yeah, probably. That's probably his attitude.
I love it. Good for him.
I don't know. I don't know the depths of his thinking. But all this stuff really didn't come out until a lot of the detail, including the role of Claudine Gay, did not come out until 2022.
Okay. All right. So we got to get through this. I don't want to lose the forest for the trees here. So this guy who's accused of academic fraud, don't even want to investigate it. This superstar economist, not only are we going to investigate it and charge him with every joke he's ever allegedly made, then you get a recommendation for a slap on the wrist sensitivity training. She comes over the top with a 2-year unpaid suspension. And then, oh, by the way, Ronald Sullivan, who we also have talked about on this show, who is an eminent law professor at Harvard, he made two mistakes as it pertains to Claudine Gay and the orthodoxy at Harvard. One was being on Weinstein's defense team. And two was that being on Weinstein's defense team provided the opportunity that I'm sure Claudine Gay was looking for, because Ronald Sullivan represented Roland Fryer in his disciplinary proceedings at the university.
Yes, that's true. Now, Ronald Sullivan's a law professor, and
right.
Remember this distinction that I made earlier about the Faculty of Arts and Science. So Ronald Sullivan's not under her jurisdiction.
No, but she can weigh in when the barbarians in the student body go, get their pitchforks and torches out for Ronald Sullivan.
Exactly, that's what's true. So when Ronald Sullivan was defending Weinstein, which now is a few years ago. Weinstein was just convicted again, but Sullivan was working for him, I think, in 2019. And when that happened, as you say, some students got their pitchforks and knives out for him. They were unhappy that a Harvard professor would be working on the defense team of Weinstein. And suddenly, Claudine Gay weighs in, and there's a front page article in the Harvard Crimson with the headline, Dean Gay calls Sullivan's response to student concerns insufficient. And basically, they bullied him off of Weinstein's defense team.
And by the way, here the coup de grace here. Wait for it. Francis, tell us who the head of the Harvard University search committee was.
Oh, well, you're from Illinois. You're going to know. Penny Pritzker.
Hey!
So, she's Jay Pritzker's sister.
Of course, yes.
I don't know how well...
Yes.
Well, you guys must know her well.
Oh, yes,
oh,
very
we're
well.
Besties.
She was
Commerce
Secretary.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, yeah, we're familiar with her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She loves riding the elevator.
Chair of Obama's campaign fundraising.
Yeah. The point here, too, is so this Claudine Gay becoming, the incoming university president at Harvard. And the takeaway is to say, the takeaway question is, what does this say, not just about Harvard, but about the academy generally? If this is sort of how you make your bones at Harvard, then how is it not the same story in most of America's universities?
I think it is. I mean, there are a literal handful of universities that have carved out the conservative antithesis to Harvard, like Hillsdale, or now there's this University of Austin thing that's getting off the ground with apparently some funding. But the rest of academia has become a monoculture, and what you can see is Claudine Gay is the model of how the orthodoxy is enforced. You can't step across the line. You step across the line slightly, and they can find a way to crucify you. So the way they crucify you will in all appearance have nothing to do with your research. They're not that dumb. So they've got their ways of keeping people in line, and particularly the black conservative will be crucified.
Yeah, they're always lying in wait to jackpot you. That's the point here. That's exactly it. Francis Benton, he is the Manhattan Contrarian. You can get his writings at ManhattanContrarian.com, ManhattanContrarian.com. Francis Benton, great piece on Claudine Gay. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hallelujah! Holy
on AM 560.
Where's the Tylenol?
The answer.
America First with Sebastian Gorka. Today at 3, right before Sean Thompson at 4 on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. It's a holiday whodunit. Cook County officials are on the hunt for a man who is interrupting online court proceedings by zooming video of himself participating in extremely graphic sexual behavior, according to an email sent out by Chief Judge Timothy Evans. In the last week, many of you have been Zoom bombed with a video of a person who exposes himself and engages in sexually explicit conduct. One act involved a large pickle or small cucumber.
Oh, wait, what?
It's a
excuse me.
It's this a Vlas. It's a Vlasic Cook County story. Thank you very much. Hello. Large pickle or small cucumber.
Mm-hmm. What does one do with the large pickle or small cucumber, Dan?
Well, why don't you use your imagination? Or
maybe I don't want to.
Or take a introductory course to anal enjoyment at Francis Parker.
That's right. Butt plugs for everybody. Actually, and dildos.
Since they're on the lookout for this guy or guys, I would suggest starting with Francis Parker grads. An unknown black male, I thought maybe a Tubin, too, but no. Unknown black male entered the courtroom via Zoom and began masturbating. The subject was laying on his back with both legs in the air, described to me as being in a position not unlike a baby would be during a diaper change.
It's the happy baby pose in yoga, folks.
Do you also masturbate?
No. It's when you lay on your back and you grab outsides of your feet and rock back and forth like a happy baby.
Uh-huh.
But without the pickle or the cucumber.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And not on a Zoom call with Cook County judge.
Yeah, no, thanks.
The subject was this again, according to the report, I'm just providing the news. The subject was masturbating with his bare penis exposed, which is pretty much how you do it, as I understand.
Oh. Okay.
And an unknown item inserted into,
oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Was he on electronic monitoring?
We don't know who he is. Multiple court sessions were Zoom bombed. On December 9th, a domestic violence court session was targeted. In that incident, the report said the man pleasured himself and, quote, also displayed a green object suspected to be a large pickle or small cucumber and inserted it in,
I have the best idea ever. Can we just go back to the way things were in 2019? Stop with these Zoom court cases and Zoom CPS school board meetings and Zoom work calls. Everybody go back to work. I'm sick of it.
Well, yeah, that is
God, I mean, how long are you going to let this go on?
One of the questions is, right, why are you still doing Zoom court calls?
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can also reach us on our text line, 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
Look at the little baby.
Yeah, that's a baby.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The subject was lying on his back, both legs in the air, described to me as being in a position not unlike a baby would be during a diaper change, and began masturbating. But the question for Tim Evans was he, if and when this person is apprehended, is he 25 years of age or older so that he has the mental acuity to recognize right from wrong? And is this even wrong in this day and age? I don't know. With what's being offered at Francis Parker, one of the city's elite schools, what's so wrong about this? It sounds like somebody who's exploring, enjoying his sexuality and, doing a sort of an impromptu train-the-trainer session, not unlike, I'm sure, the dean of students at Francis Parker, Joe Bruno, would applaud.
Wow, multiple court sessions. He's been Zoom bombing.
Is there such a thing as explicit sexual conduct anymore? Exposes himself, so what?
And when they do find this guy, literally, what are they going to do with him? Celebrate him?
I don't know. You put him in prison? I mean, he'll probably beg to be put in prison based on his enjoyment of large pickles and or small cucumbers. Oh, by the way, in a related story, an 80-year-old patient visited a hospital in Toulon to have World War One artillery shell lodged in his rectum removed. It generated a bomb scare at the hospital in Toulon.
Where?
In France.
Oh. Okay.
88-year-old. 80-year-old had a World War I artillery shell lodged in his ass. Yeah. On Saturday evening, required the intervention of bomb disposal personnel, the evacuation of adult and pediatric emergencies, as well as the diversion of incoming emergencies. We had to manage the risk in a reactive framework. When in doubt, took all precautions. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One doctor in France, by the way, the artillery shell, about 8 inches long, more than 2 inches wide, not a live shell.
Not a live round. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's good for the little guy.
Yeah. French doctor, an apple, a mango, or even a can of shaving foam. We're used to finding unusual objects inserted where they shouldn't be, but a shell? Never.
Where do you even find the rear shell?
He's a collector, maybe, you know?
Wow.
Military collector. This will probably be like a 200 level class at Francis Parker.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm obsessed about Francis Parker. Well, I do know why. Yeah.
And that guy's still there, that dean of students.
Because what's wrong with this? These guys, the show and tell, this is bring this 88-year-old when he recovers from the removal. And, this guy who's intervening in Zoom calls for Cook County, bring him in for a show and tell at Francis Parker and all the schools, all CPS. I mean, that's a private school, but all CPS schools, too, as well. Suburban schools, right?
Got a text message. What was on electronic monitoring? The guy or the pickle?
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some call them cucumbers, Dan and Amy. Others call them rectal thermometers.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. Will he be held in contempt of Zoom?
Others call them late at night. Please come over.
It's just weird that system is so vulnerable that people can just bounce in from court case to court case. Or not people. This sycophant, this pervert, this naked pervert who really is enjoying this.
Why is he a sicko?
Well, it's just not behavior.
I mean, again, I'm just, you know. What these were seen once upon a time as verboten behaviors. Maybe time, place, manner restrictions. Maybe, you know, you don't want to interrupt the important work that Cook County Circuit Court judges do. when they get around to doing it, you know, since what... backlog of cases and so on and so forth, in part because of this Zoom nonsense that goes on in perpetuity.
This is never going to stop.
Never going to stop. I mean, it's not like they got Rickrolled.
Oh.
That would have been something. Actually, they should do that. We'll do a Rickroll of Tim Evans's court. You remember that. You know what that is, right? Rick Astley.
But explain it for other people.
Yeah.
Dude, Rick Astley.
Yeah,
never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down. That's pretty bad.
Yes, it is bad.
mm-hmm. I need a trench coat on when I sing Rick Astley. Mm-hmm. Rick Astley, Debbie Gibson,
Rick Astley,
Astley,
not Ashley.
Never allowed to be played in our car.
Debbie Gibson,
Tiffany, maybe.
There's a great bit. Who did that bit? Greg Giraldo, I think it was Greg Giraldo about. Debbie Gibson, where do you come up with ideas for your songs? My dad. And he's like, oh, really? Your dad is out there mowing the lawn. Shake your love. I just can't shake love. Hey, Dad, that's a good idea for a song. Yeah.
Can you find that song, Justin?
All right. Some music ode to the large pickle or the small cucumber. I thought about this if this was... going to be something that detailed the unit being presented. Uh-huh. And I thought, that's not an unknown black male. That's our mayor. But no, I don't think so.
Never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down. Never gonna run around and desert you. Never gonna make you cry.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is a full-blown four-alarm holiday emergency here.
On AM 560.
We're going to have the happiest Christmas since Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny f***ing K.
The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you.
Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.